Wow. Here we go, folks. Couldn't get my intro music working. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com, Station 2. Every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. I'm your brilliant, humble host, PK, and I am here to talk about events of the day. I specialize in my concepts of political science, economics, history, geography. I'm fond of saying that I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history. I mean, not all of it. No one knows all of it, but I'm pretty good at it. So if you want to call in the station, the number is 888-429-5471. I don't have a guest tonight, but I thought I would be talking about the disastrous wars that are still going on that the federal government continues to fight and lose. Not that they were winnable in the first place, but they're just milking the economy, milking the taxpayer, all for the aggrandizement of the military-industrial complex and the Israeli lobby. And before I continue, let me heap thanks and praise upon BBSRadio.com and all alternative media. Thank goodness. Because the corporate Zionist-controlled major media, their opinion cartel, they only say what they want to say. They serve the regime. Both parties are basically the same except how much they want to spend in their different rhetoric. But they're mostly all globalists. They're beholden to the Israeli lobby, the military-industrial complex, and, of course, the CIA is heavily, heavily involved in the media, universities, Libya, Syria, overthrowing governments, regimes. I still haven't figured out where the CIA gets its marching orders. Is it an entity into itself? I don't think the president tells them what to do. I don't think that's within his sphere of power, no matter who it is. And as always, I'd like to say hello to those pricks who are listening from the CIA and the FBI, national security, all those government pricks with their national security jobs all wrapped up in patriotism, as these fellow Americans of ours continue to harass us, to oppress us, to make us less free. Because ever since 9/11, these chumps have been glad to jump on the government gravy train and the government payroll and oppress the rest of us. You know, I still don't believe that the planes alone took those two towers down. I firmly believe that Israel's Mossad was the major force behind 9/11, with probably some help from the CIA or some rogue people in the CIA, who knows. But there's no way those planes alone took those towers down. So that ties into what I'm talking about, because 9/11 was the pretext for all these stupid wars. And I don't know if you know this, but at the first cabinet meeting, Bush's first cabinet meeting in, February 2001, his secretary, his Treasury secretary, I believe it was Paul O'Neill. I know his last name was O'Neill. I think his first name was Paul. Well, was rather appalled, no pun intended with the alliteration there, was appalled that a lot of the topics of that first cabinet meeting were to invade Iraq or punish Iraq. And that was before our second Pearl Harbor of 9/11. The neocons were trying to get Clinton to invade Iraq, but to his credit, he wouldn't do it or bomb them even further. He did somewhat, and he helped impose that tragic embargo on Iraq. But the neocons, the Zionists, the Israeli lobby, that crowd, they were anxious to harass Iraq. So the 9/11 false flag, that's right, false flag, was their perfect way to expand the wars, expand war, to further feed the insatiable military-industrial complex, and to placate the Israeli lobby. Although a lot of Israelis say, or Israel leaders, Zionist leaders say, that they weren't pushing the U.S. to attack Iraq. I'm sure they didn't mind because Iraq had the largest Arab army in the Middle East. But it was a lot of American Zionist Jews who were pushing for this war. Douglas Feith, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Kagan, all these neocon pricks, and who've never served. And a lot of these neocon, these Zionists, have dual Israeli-U.S. passports. So I talk about it on this show. Fearlessly, I talk about that on this show. And they're a major problem. So what we have is this whole situation now with wars that don't end. And this is going on. It's in its 10th year, starting in its 11th year. And there's numerous bases in Afghanistan and Iraq, although the theater of war has wound down in Iraq. Well, now that's more into Shiite hands. There seems to be maybe a sort of a truce or a more of a bonding between Shiite and Sunni Muslim. So this whole mess in Afghanistan, also known as the Graveyard of Empires, just ask Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, the British and the Russians. So Uncle Sam's cowboys are going to go out there and they're going to kick butt, aren't they? But they're not afraid of you, Uncle Sam. These people are not afraid of you. They'll wait things out. They kicked Russia's butt, Britain's butt, and now they're doing it to the U.S. So the U.S. empire is going to collapse, I hope, soon. I so look forward to the collapse of the American empire and the rebirth of the American Republic, although I don't think it can be rebirthed as a republic unless it's several republics that have broken away from this useless cesspool of corruption and inflation, war and debt, otherwise known as Washington, D.C. D.C., does that stand for definitely communist or definitely collectivist? Again, the number here with the mighty PK is 888-429-5471. Now, I'm going to talk about what's going on in the Middle East now and some figures for you, a few figures mixed in with some statistics. And I'm getting this latest from, of course, I've known a lot of this anyway, but this is from Gary D. Barnett, who is president of Barnett Financial Services in Lewistown, Montana. Montana? Wow. I only know two people from Montana. I don't know anybody from Wyoming, North or South Dakota, Washington State, New Hampshire, Vermont. These are the places I know nobody from. Where else? Utah. Idaho. Don't know anybody from those places. Interestingly enough, don't know anybody from Hawaii. Don't know much about history. Anyway, as the song goes, but not as I go. So Gary Barnett, his concept is, thank you for your, he's talking about military service. Thank you for your service. No thanks. So he questions those being praised, thanks for their service, and he gets into that discussion a little bit. One moment, please. I forgot my water. One can get a little bit dry after they speak for an hour. So Mr. Barnett here was talking about military service and sort of like, you know, why do people say that, thank you for your service? Why are they thanking and praising every soldier they see? Because he finds it very difficult to think of any term that disgusts him more than those who utter continuously in the presence of any soldier in the U.S., thank you for your service. And I understand why he does this. Now I'm going to get into the nuts and bolts of it. And that would be, it's a series of questions, actually. Is it because hatred of the U.S. is increasing and new enemies are being created in the Middle East and around the rest of the world? You know, for me, it's a sad thing. If the majority, the dense, intense majority of Americans are so clueless, ignorant, and or stupid, if that they don't understand that the federal government, the U.S. government's enabling terrorists throughout the world, causing more problems, intervening in other countries' business, both militarily and politically, if the majority of Americans don't understand that or don't get it, then they'll never get it because they're too concerned about their video games, sports, and trampling each other to get the latest tennis shoes, trainers, whatever, from Walmart, etc. So that's what we're faced with. Well, that's why we have intellectuals like myself, the good type, those of us who do have an agenda, and in my case, it's the ethics of liberty, a free market economy, always under the umbrella or big tent of liberty, property, and peace. And of course, armed neutrality as a country, as a nation, as different republics. So back to my question. Is it because, his question, hatred of the U.S. is increasing and new enemies are being created in the Middle East and all around the rest of the world. Is that why people thank our troops for their service? And the people that thanked them, do they even realize, do they even know about U.S. foreign policy? And if they feel like they're helpless to fix it or change it, why do they vote for Republicans or Democrats who keep giving them more of the same? I deplore Romney. There's no way I would vote for Romney. The architect of Obamacare, this clown, you think there's a difference between the parties? Is Romney the best? Is Romney the best that this country can do? How sad is that? How sad is that? All right, so his other question, his next question. Is it because thousands and thousands of innocent people are being killed now in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and many more are being threatened? Is that why we thank our troops? And here's a very damning one that I've recently read. I think there's a book out now detailing these numbers, but it's rather appalling. But is it because 20 million to 30 million foreigners, mostly innocent civilians, have died just since World War II due to U.S. interference and war? Now, we're talking Korean War, Vietnam, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, CIA intervening in other countries, overthrowing governments. There's a lot of deaths caused by the U.S. government, federal government, and mostly innocent deaths of foreigners abroad. To the complete ignorance or denial of the American people, or most American people. Now, why else are we thanking people, every soldier we see, some people thanking them for their service? Is it because indefinite detention without due process, torture, assassination, and rendition are now common and accepted practices? Are we proud of that? gee, who am I to invoke the Eighth Amendment here, which forbids nor cruel and unusual punishments be inflicted? And here's a very sad one. Is it because suicide rates amongst American soldiers have increased 80% since the Iraq war began? And how sad is that? 80%. As I understand it, military suicides of active duty and/or veterans is at an all-time high. Therefore, every recruit or every GI who comes back from Iraq or Afghanistan has post-traumatic stress disorder. They all have it. They all should get psychiatric care when they come back or be evaluated. I mean, a lot of men are, you know, too tough and they're, you know, insensitive enough where they can't accept that, but, you know, they should. It's for their own good. So most soldiers, whether they know it or not, they do have this post-traumatic stress syndrome. Is it because mental problems now send more military personnel to the hospital than any other cause? I didn't know that, but that's based on what I just said about so many of our recruits or troops have these psychological problems from war and all the things they've been through. And sadly enough, is it because destruction and separation of military families is rampant? These guys on their second and third, fourth tours of duty, you know, of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism, but I think a lot of them are real tired of it and wondering what the hell is going on. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think I'm pretty close that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost our country, in terms of allowing for inflation, solely caused by the federal government, by the way, that these two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost our country as much or more as World War II. I think I'm correct in my numbers. Is it because civil liberties have all but disappeared due to so-called terrorism legislation? Terror legislation would be more accurate. Look at the curtailing of our rights. Look at the TSA. Thousands of sexual aggressors. That's what TSA stands for. Or thousands of stupid a-holes. Well, we know that, but I prefer the first definition. Thousands of sexual aggressors. Is it because the creation of the U.S. Patriot Act, Militaries Commissions Act, NDAA, which Obama signed on New Year's Eve, TSA and Department of Homeland Security, DHS? Yes, Department of Homeland Security. Yet another huge federal bureaucracy. The Republicans failed so bad on 9/11 that they gave themselves a $40 billion raise by creating the Department of Homeland Security to defend, quote unquote, us. That is their achievement. So I'm laughing at those idiots, but that's the Republicans for you. Big spending rhinos. The Republicans, the conservatives, the neoconservatives, they don't mind the welfare state as long as they're running it. Just as Democrats and idiots like George Clooney, they don't mind the wars and all this increased fighting and whatnot. As long as Democrats are doing it, good Democrats in power, that's okay. I love the hypocrisy, but what the left gives Obama, the pass that they give him. Is it because of the massive buildup of killer drones abroad and at home? When I first saw those goddamn drones, I knew immediately that they will be used here in America, and they are, and I'm sure that more than just the border. They'll be snooping around and all kinds of things. Yet I keep hearing how free we are. Ever since ever since 9/11, I keep hearing about how free we are. Yet when you look around, you see that more of our rights are being trampled, such as the TSA. And now they want to do this crap in, or they have done it in bus stations and whatnot. I mean, if they ever harass me outside of an airport, I'm going to tell them to F off. Goddamn useless bureaucrats in their, I don't know, slightly over minimum wage jobs and their stupid little, you know, little blue costumes. So I have no respect for those idiots. These killer drones, yeah, they're using them for what, to detect drug activity on the border and illegals. That's one thing, but you know they'll be used. I think police departments already have them. You know, this is becoming such a security police state. People won't even see it, the sheeple. Again, you know, America drinks and goes home, Frank Zappa. More concerned with video games, trampling people to buy new tennis shoes and sports, the opiate of the people. As I was saying before, that's why good intellectuals like myself, who are bringing an agenda to the forefront, we're the ones, we're our own policy wonks. Many of us are. We do the research. We read the books. We publish essays and articles and books about, you know, how to correct things, how to fix things. We're not statist, socialistic, collectivist intellectuals of any stripe. We have a focused purpose. And again, mine is always spreading the ideals of liberty, property, and peace, the brilliance of Austrian economics, and the ethics of liberty. All right, back to his questions. This is about the military and those who serve. And why are so many people praising the troops? Is it because are they fearing, you know, that we need all their protection because of what's going on in the world, which our own government has created, but people aren't smart enough to wake up and see it. Okay, the next one. Is it because the huge deficit spending to support multiple aggressive wars is causing economic chaos? Since the beginning of war, war has always been very expensive. You know, people have turned in their jewelry or gold so that the state can melt it down and use it for, use it for getting revenue or giving them the gold, or if they have to use precious metals or whatnot in war production. But, you know, the public suffers a lower standard of living, more austerity, all this kind of crap. So, you know, wars are very, very, very expensive. And who do they benefit? Well, they benefit, you know, the arms merchants, the military-industrial complex, which is what decorated Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler wrote about when he wrote his book, War is a Racket. I believe it was published in 1935. He was in World War I, and I think the Philippines and all these, you know, Central America, Haiti, all these other countries that the federal government involved the military, and he realized that he was sort of just a bag man for the protected privileged corporations down there at the behest of U.S. Uncle Sam. So that's this economic chaos thing. The war is distorting the market process. It's sucking away valuable capital, investment capital, much more needed and important for private sector functions. And conservatives and Republicans hardly ever talk about cutting military spending. Like Ron Paul talks about, we want spending for defense, but the military budget is ridiculous. It's huge, and it doesn't serve a purpose apart from propping up foreign dictators and foreign countries. You know, there's a difference between the military budget, which is way full of waste, probably 75% more than needs to be, propping up, you know, these foreign bases, all these something like over 900 U.S. military bases in over 140 foreign countries. That's like $1 trillion foreign policy. It doesn't benefit us. It doesn't create any wealth. It makes the military-industrial complex more wealthy. And I believe in a defense for a country. That's constitutional. But it's about 95% beyond what it's supposed to be. As the great economist Ludwig von Mises said, that it isn't military preparedness or having new weapons that is really evil per se, it is the spirit of conquest that is the evil, the problem. Here's another question. Is it the surging number of double amputees of American soldiers? is so awful. I don't understand how pricks like LBJ and Bush, W, Jr., even the old man, how can they sleep at night after causing and staging these wars, causing these problems like this, and all these severely maimed and wounded GIs coming back, besides the dead ones. I think in some cases, as sad as it is, it'd be better to be dead. I wouldn't want to be a multiple amputee, double or triple, quadruple amputee. I mean, I can't even watch those commercials that are asking money for wounded soldiers and this and that. And I never give a dime to these things collecting for wounded soldiers and wounded warriors and all this, because if this massive military budget cannot comfortably, generously take care of our own troops, I'm not going to pay a dime into it. I've already paid a lot into it. It's so misallocated. It's just beyond belief. Very frustrating. And I don't see much light at the end of the tunnel. I think things are going to get much worse. Two more questions that Gary Burnett poses to why we always thank the troops. Is it because of increasing energy costs due to the U.S. unwarranted presence in the Middle East region? Is it because the domestic policies have now become a brutal militarized force bent on controlling the entire population? Well, look around you. I mean, Jesse Ventura was there. They've got these FEMA camps that they say are for eventually when they round up or if they use large numbers of illegal aliens. Well, let's face it, they're going to stick Americans in those camps. Look how militarized the police force is. They're so eager to get these goodies from the federal government and Uncle Sam in the military. Of course, a lot of policemen are former military, so that makes it easier to retrain on this stuff or train on new stuff. And plus the crowd control stuff they have psychologically. I think the Russians have it too. They can make you ill at so-called illegal assemblies or protests. They can make you ill. They have technology now. We've seen it on TV where they can aim a beam at you and it'll burn your skin. It won't kill you, but it'll burn you and make you get out of the way. So, so much for the First Amendment. The government's totally out of control. So the tax-eating class, the cops, the politicians, the bureaucrats, you know, those who feed at the tax trough, you know, they're calling the shots. So if you're one of them, you know, you get preferential treatment. You get away with more. Yeah, they pop a few cops every now and then for trouble or crime or corruption, but generally it's the whole corrupt system. I didn't realize this until about four or five years ago, how corrupt the whole system is. Of course, it's all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism, but you know, it's very disappointing to me to see what's going on now that I didn't realize the depth at what these globalists and the CIA and the FBI and this whole crowd, the depths that they will go to misrepresent the truth. But what I like to say about truth, like the saying goes, truth passes through three stages: ridicule, opposition, self-evident. I think of Ron Paul when I see those. He's still hanging in there. He'll probably be at the convention. He's getting a lot more delegate votes than is let on by the media and establishment status quo, because they don't like Ron Paul. They fear Ron Paul. They can't control Ron Paul. They can't control PK either, because it can't be bought or intimidated. And I'm sure a lot in the government, my fellow Americans, would like my show shut down and all these other type shows. They don't want people to think. They don't want, you know, we're a threat to the status quo. That's why they want to be able to turn the internet on and off, these politicians. That's not consumers calling for that, screaming for that. Hey, we want you to be able to turn off our internet. That's what the statists are doing, and the protected political class with their fat pensions and the way they protect each other. So, you know, as Burnett says here, Gary Burnett, who I've been reading from, as he says, those who continue to believe the propaganda about all U.S. wars leading to the protection of freedom and to our national security are blinded by ignorance and consumed by pathetic false patriotism. How true. He says, no U.S. wars have ever served the purpose of freedom. They've only served to destroy it. Well, I agree, because as Mises said, war makes the is bad for the winner, too, because it makes the state bigger and more powerful. Yeah, they cut back after World War II, but Truman helped launch the Cold War. And even that, as I understand it, yeah, I hated communism, the evil communism. I would hate to live under that collectivist system. Destruction of property rights and all liberties, individual rights. Geez, sounds like what we're getting now. But even the Cold War was ramped up by the U.S. government and the military, growing military-industrial complex. As I understand it, Russia was too poor at the time to even embark on a huge, you know, trade-off. So there was a lot of false images of the power of the communists and this. Yeah, they had power. They had a lot of atrocities and this and that. But it was exploited by the big shots in the U.S., the money people and the bankers. So, as he says, Barnett says, due to these wars of aggression and occupation, our freedoms are virtually non-existent today. And here he's saying this, and I'm adding my things. Think about this, folks. We are spied upon, tracked, searched without warrant, sexually assaulted, and radiated. You know, and there's now checking points in parts of this country where it is demanded that we show our papers. And killer spy drones are filling our skies. Government agents and military are patrolling all U.S. borders, and Black Hawk war helicopters supply heavily armed soldiers on tethers flying over our cities when they do their drills. I've seen it on YouTube. Alex Jones has it. So, as Barnett says, because of all these wars, the government has gained enormous power and continues to assault liberty. So a police state environment has taken hold, and if not curbed soon, will lead to martial law in the future. And this is shocking. The Department of Homeland Security has purchased enough killing ammunition to murder more than twice the population on the say-so of one man. Who, Obama? Americans can and are being assassinated. Why? So imagine that, the DHS collecting all this powerful ammunition. Why do they need that? Do they think that they're going to create a scenario where they are going to confront the American people and intimidate us or tell us that we have to do what they say in our own good, our own interest, because otherwise we can't survive as a nation? Scary to me, but I won't put up with it. I think the state of Virginia is saying no to the federal government about the National Detention Act that Obama signed. So, as Barnett says, in order for our national security to be defended, we first have to be attacked. And he recommends, as do I, in order for our national security to be defended, we first have to be attacked. That has not happened, said Barnett. In order to protect freedom here at home, all foreign wars must cease, and all the government agencies and terrorist legislation since 9/11 should be abolished immediately. Every U.S. base on foreign soil should be closed, and every troop stationed in another country should come home and enter the private sector. At least that would be a good start. I agree with him. And he closes with saying, there is a reason that the young are sent as cannon fodder to die in the wars of the politicians, bankers, and corporations. The young are less likely to challenge the orders they are given, orders meant to be obeyed regardless of the immoral nature of those demands and regardless of the horrible consequences they will certainly face. Those who, quote unquote, serve do not serve the people who falsely praise them. They only serve one master, and that master is the nation state and its benefactors. It is not we the people. Well, that's what I don't believe that anymore, that our soldiers are protecting our rights. And I don't back down from that either, because all they are doing is propping up and protecting a globalist empire. And again, it's all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism, but it's a false patriotism. And I think a lot of our troops are waking up, because once again, my patriotism, let me back up, sorry. Unlike most people, I never confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government. I have no loyalty to the U.S. government. They can go to hell for all I'm concerned. I never confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government. That's because my patriotism is towards the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution. So I'm clearly delineating where my patriotism stands and how it functions and what its ethics are. It's not loyalty to the government, regardless of who's in it. So this whole war situation just makes the state more powerful. And this is what those neocon bastards did with the Project for a New American Century, which was written, I think, in 1998 or so. Bill Kristol signed on, and I think, I'm sure Frank Gaffney, that neocon bastard, I think that Cheney did. And in it, it clearly states that, you know, they wanted to rebuild America's defenses as if they were down in the late 90s. They weren't, you know, the Cold War was over, we were pulling back. Oh, and they were wetting their pants, these neocons, and they want bigger military and this and that. So there's a key phrase in there that says, unless there is another Pearl Harbor-like catastrophe, we won't be able to rally the American people. Something to that effect. I don't have it right in front of me. So, and then you see what happens 3 years later. Those evil Muslims attacked us. Well, first of all, I think Osama bin Laden had next to nothing to do with 9/11. I think it was staged, and Israel's Mossad did a masterful job. Of course, as we know, the CIA, the Mossad, and Britain's MI6, they are the masters of deception. So, you know, I hardly believe anything in the media anymore. I can sort of pick out what I believe and what I don't. And they mix so many half-truths in with the truth, which makes it worse, which I always go back to that great concept from Lawrence of Arabia when Claude Rains says to Lawrence, he says, well, he implied that Lawrence should have known about the double dealing that was going on in the Middle East and that the Allies did intend to colonize it, even though they said they wouldn't. And Lawrence was stuck in the middle because he promised, you know, he was for Arab independence, helping them, but not to colonize them. So there's a saying in the movie that Claude Rains says to Lawrence concerning this, him being stuck in the middle and, you know, supposedly leading the Arabs on, which is what Lawrence would appalled him, and he was stuck in it. He didn't want to be that way. But there's a good line in the movie by Claude Rains who he says to Lawrence concerning his naivety about, and I remember it's a great quote, he said, people who tell lies like me merely hide the truth, but people who tell half lies have forgotten where they put it. People who tell half lies have forgotten where they put the truth. So that's what I see. And that's how the media works and politicians. They lace in truth with myth or BS or unconstitutional things that they want to do, and then the public buys it. That's why with a principled stand on the issues, I would never go there. And once you have the ethics of liberty, you understand the ethics of liberty, and you understand Austrian economics and this and that, you know, none of this is appealing to you. It's just, we're mainly turned off by it, want nothing to do with it. It's this whole crowd and what they're trying to push on us. We just, you know, like myself, I can't be bought. I can't be intimidated. You know, I think it's just not nonsensical. So for myself, I, who am the logical successor to Ron Paul, I cannot be bought or intimidated. And in discussion, I firmly reject, and I'll say it up front, I reject the cowardly, usual cowardly terms of anti-Semitic or anti-Semite, racist, treason, treasonous, sedition, seditious, unpatriotic, un-American. Those are just words that try to shut people up. And two other words that I hate, the way they're used against those of us who know better, is when they call you, where was I on that? Was not un-American. I mentioned un-American. Two other words I hate is when they say conspiracy theory or conspirator or conspiracy. That's a way to try to shut down all objective intellectual scholarly debate. I'm not interested in conspiracy theories. I'm interested in the facts of conspiracies. And I'm proud to be a truther. I never back down from that. But the media, the Bill O'Reillys, the Bill Maher's, they're in lockstep about, you know, they don't like truthers. You know, they don't like those of us who don't accept the official government lies about 9/11. Yes, planes hit the tower, but there was more to it than that. And they still haven't, they still don't have a solution why World Trade Center building number 7 collapsed at, 5:20 in the afternoon on the same day. They don't have a solution. They don't have an answer for that. And that's a real smoking gun right there. But then again, probably 90% of the country, maybe 95% of the country, doesn't even know that World Trade Center Building 7 collapsed on 9/11. Most people probably don't even know that. I knew it early on. But again, you have probably something like 800,000 people on the government payroll whose job is to distort the truth and national security and obscure what's really going on. So I believe they exploit events, and there's always a patsy. You had for Kennedy, of course, you had Oswald. He was the patsy. Possibly involved, but set up. The CIA always needs their patsy. Then you had Sirhan Sirhan. Then you had James Earl Ray. Even Dr. King's assassination is BS, because if James Earl Ray was involved, I mean, he was a patsy or set up. I don't think that he did the shooting. I think it might have been the FBI. And they were down on King because he was so much, and rightly so, against the Vietnam War. Here he's trying to help his people at home. And his so-called friend, Johnson, LBJ, was expanding the war, getting more people killed, while expanding the welfare state at home. So the Democrats or the liberals, they really did turn on LBJ at the 68 conventions in Chicago. They didn't want more of this war. And these were liberals who were attacking the place. These were Democrats, liberals and leftists. Because usually that's their traditional home, the Democratic Party. But they turned on them, which I thought was a great thing. So back to this whole war scenario. As I like to say, the wars are bankrupting the country. But you hardly hear any politicians say that. Not Romney, not Obama. And to me, Romney is a disaster. What I predict, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, is that Romney cannot beat Obama. Only Ron Paul can beat Obama. And if the media gave him the same support as they did Romney or, you know, Obama, Ron Paul would be that much more popular and would have an easy job defeating Obama. But the Republicans don't want Ron Paul because he's so bad on foreign policy. Oh, they wet their pants because he wants to follow the Constitution, which the politicians in the military are sworn to uphold and defend. So my prediction again for the fall race is that as much as I can't stand Obama, I can't stand Romney either. Romney cannot defeat Obama. Obama will win in a close race. That's what I predict. But I can't stand Romney. He's such an impersonal, insincere, oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. No disrespect to used car salesman. But Romney, yeah, he might have been good in business, but a lot of it he got from the government tax trough, subsidies, handouts. So, I mean, he's just everything I despise about a Republican. He's got that, you know, he's that elitist type, out of touch with reality. He's so fake to me. It's so artificial. He doesn't understand economics. And he's appointed a lot of that same Bush crowd, neocons. You know, it's back to these same people again. You know, and that's the problem. We need to clean house and get rid of this bunch. I want term limits across the board. So for myself, this fall, if I can't write Ron Paul's name in, I'm either going to vote Libertarian or not vote at all. Because it's not my civic duty to vote. And incumbents always win, quite often. I mean, they're harder to defeat. I just wish Ron Paul had more balls and was more combative, because it's sort of like too late now. I wanted to coach him. I had some key phrases I would have told him. And my favorite one is, speaking, if I was him speaking in the person of him, I would say, you know, I represent the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, which is where the Republican Party should be. That's what he needs to say, some key phrases. And he should say, if you go watch my speech from 2003 on YouTube, or 2002, you will see me clearly laying out the scenario of what's going to happen and is happening to the economy, because Ron Paul has been right essentially about everything, about the economy, about the drug war, about the currencies, getting sound money, about the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, and also they say sound money, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and Syria, the housing bubble. Ron Paul's been right about all of that. And again, it's not because he has a crystal ball. It's because he understands Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty. So here we have a modern day Thomas Jefferson right in our midst. And the majority of us don't even notice it. They can't even see it. It's just really sad. But he is making a difference, Dr. Paul, and it'd be interesting. I think he'll probably go all the way to the convention, and maybe they'll have a speaking slot for him. But hopefully the Ron Paul Republicans are here to stay. I know I am. If I'm anywhere, any political meeting or something, people ask me what I am, I'll say, well, I'm a Ron Paul Republican. And that clearly delineates where you stand. And I stand with Ron Paul and the ethics of liberty, and the Austrian School of Economics. That's who I stand with. You know, the federal government is supposed to protect our rights and our borders and defend us. Well, they can't even do that right. You know, the military is the federal government. They couldn't even defend their own headquarters from an attack on 9/11, which a lot of people think was a false flag attack, among other things. But ever since 9/11, it's obvious to see the growth of the state, more cameras everywhere. You know, I don't like crime either, violent crime, but of course the drug war makes it worse and the unemployment makes it worse. So what, and all I can do is throw people in jail? You know, fill up the jails with small government Republican Reagan. It's such a myth about Reagan cutting taxes. Withholding taxes went up under Reagan about 83. I cursed him then, and that damn Alan Greenspan advised him to higher contributions to Social Security taxes and raise the retirement age. So taxes went up a few times under Reagan. And again, Reagan, Mr. The government is the problem, not the solution. What does he do? He embarks on a huge socialist, centrally planned drug war. So now there's more prison constructions. The prison guard lobby is powerful because they like those three strikes and you're outlaws, the bastards. And I'm not talking about violent crimes, three strikes, you're out. So Reagan starts this massive drug war. More people are put in jail and prisons. More people, more prisons built. You know, per capita, America has more people in prison than Russia or China. I think it's the biggest prison rate in the country. So we have that whole mess to contend with. And that's, you know, that's Reagan for you. That's Mr. Government is not the solution. It's the problem. So what does he do? He feeds it even more. He creates a bigger DEA. I mean, it's just sad. So, what I like to say is that when St. Reagan, shortly after St. Reagan took office, he pressured his Republican Congress to reluctantly raise the debt ceiling so that by the time St. Reagan left office, he had tripled or quadrupled the debt. The welfare state, the welfare, or should I say Republican, so I would say Republican first, the under all presidents, the welfare warfare state continues, or like as under Bush, the warfare welfare state continues. So neither Bush or Obama stands up to the power structure or the status quo. They're part of it, you know, on a lower rung, like Carol Quigley said in his book, Tragedy and Hope. That's a big Clinton fan. He's a big fan of Clinton's because Clinton had him in college, I think, as a prof. But he wrote about the Illuminati and all this and acknowledged its existence because he was allowed by that secretive crowd to write about it. And he didn't come out against it. He just thought that it shouldn't be so secretive and should be more upfront about it. So that's in that book, Tragedy and Hope. And that was Clinton's, one of Clinton's big heroes as a college prof. So this whole crowd, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, they all serve the regime. It's sort of an unending foreign policy, same foreign policy, and, you know, it doesn't change. So, no matter who's in power, it pretty much stays the same. The one government party with two heads and or the one bird of prey with two wings has its hooks way into the people. And we're led to believe there's a difference in the parties when all they do is basically spend the same thing. When they say they're going to cut spending, it's only the projected future cuts. So they get people hooked on all their government goodies, and then they've got to borrow more to fund all this because they don't want to raise taxes. So you have the myth of borrowed money and the myth of printing money out of thin air, debt monetization, which only leads to inflation. And inflation, by the way, the prices do not all rise uniformly. So that is something to contend with. And again, as I understand it, the price of oil in terms of the gold price is about the same. A lot of inflated dollars going around and more on the way, I'm sure. So that's what we have to deal with. That's what's going on. And I am here as the mighty PK to spread the word about this fearlessly. And if I'm proven wrong, fine, depending on what the issue is. But generally, I'm on the ball and right on the money. And part of it is because I'm not afraid to speak up, and I reject those words I spoke of earlier, anti-Semitism, racist, treasonous, traitorous, sedition, unloyal, all this crap, conspiracy theory. I reject all that nonsense as a type of censorship against all objective intellectual scholarly revisionism or inquiry. And that's why, as I read earlier about truth passing through three stages, you know, one, ridicule, two, opposition, three, self-evident, I forgot to mention that the best friend of truth, the greatest friend of truth, is time. It takes time for these things to come out. That's why even I hadn't heard of them before. I was wondering what all this was about. And so time gives one more to do research to find out what the facts really are and what's going on, you know. And so that neatly dovetails with the three stages of truth. And speaking of truth, with that, I'm winding down my show now because I can. And I'm even letting the suits know in the office, because I sort of run things by the seat of my pants because I can. I can write an intellectual essay off the top of my head about history, political science, or current events, because it comes easy to me. That's one of my passions. And I, that's where I'm coming from. So I continue to fight the battle against statism and out of control government power, whatever it is, drug wars, war in general. And with that, I, your host, the mighty PK, is signing off. I'm here every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. Thanks for tuning in to my humble wisdom and brilliance. I'll see you back here again next week, same time, same place, at the mighty bbsradio.com, Station 2. Good night, everyone. PK over and out.